Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer, and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hello. Do I sound older to you? I'm now 45 since you last heard my little voice. Had a birthday. Love a birthday. Funny thing, yesterday night I was exhausted because I had a party on my birthday, April the 10th. I know you know when my birthday is. Everybody knows when my birthday is, probably. But I had a party, and then yesterday, which was the 11th, the day after, I was pretty knackered because didn't have much sleep after the party. So last night I get into bed and then I'm like, oh, I'll record my little introduction to the podcast, and I recorded something for you, and I sound terrible. I mean, I don't think lying down is a good place to record because you just, well, when you're very tired, I just sounded a little bit like I'd been doped or something. It was like me kind of being like this. I just don't think you would have appreciated it. So now I speak to you from Friday afternoon, Friday the 12th of April. The sun is shining. It's a really beautiful day. My house is looking flipping gorgeous because I've got tons of beautiful flowers. I got flowers from some friends. I got flowers from Richard. And it just looks gorgeous. I love it. I can see what Elton was all about when he went into his mad flower phase. I don't know if it's ended. He might still be mad keen on the flowers, but yeah, it's just a glorious way to live. So maybe 45 for me is about that. It's about flowers. It's about kaftans. I wore a kind of pink kaftan with feathered arms and a diamante neckline for my birthday because I've decided that's also about me. I'm just recording in here, Dan. Can you give me 2 minutes? That's Richard with his tea. Look, he just put the sound of the... Close the door, darling. Honestly, born in a barn. He hasn't shut the door. He said, all right, silently, and then left it open. That's what I have to deal with, guys. Anyway, I've also had a really good week. I've been songwriting. I'm in the studio today. And I've been in the studio with Ed Harcourt and Nile Rodgers. Yeah, I know. That was actually really fun. And would you believe it? We've done something kind of funky. But I do like it. I like it a lot. Anyway, I'm in the sitting room, which is kind of poignant because that is where I interviewed this week's guest. Her name is Heather James. And I use the word poignant because it's also the room where I interviewed her daughter, Deborah James. Now, this is the first time I've had the mother of a previous guest on the podcast. And, of course, the extra level of poignancy is because Deborah's no longer with us. So I'd actually listened back to my previous conversation with Deborah before I had Heather come over. I'd met Heather really briefly at Deborah's 40th birthday, the birthday that ended up being Deborah's last birthday before she died. And they're such a lovely, warm family. And then I listened back to the conversation and it meant so much to me, not just because Deborah was such a, you know, amazing woman with so much force, and not just because I knew when we met that she was not going to be around for much longer, but also because I just really, really liked her. We got on really well. We're the same age, so we had lots of common ground. I'm a teeny tiny bit older than her, but not much. So, you know, a lot of our reference points were the same and everything was so similar. But then we had this stark difference in that she knew she was very, very unwell and that there wasn't going to be a bit of her life when she wasn't someone with cancer. So as I sat down to talk to Heather, who sat in the same chair that Deborah sat in, it really got me, actually. It was emotional. But it was also lovely because Heather is lovely. And the reason why it was fitting that we spoke and we are putting this conversation out in April is because this is Bowel Cancer Awareness Month. So Heather has been doing lots to continue the legacy that her daughter set off with raising awareness and raising money, because there is the Bowel Babe Fund for Cancer Research UK, which I think Deborah's aim was to raise, I think it's $500,000. It's now raised over $13 million, thanks to generosity from the public, which will go towards research, awareness, some very specific targeted fundraising into different aspects of basically affecting it, so that the goal is that when someone receives the diagnosis like Deborah did, it will not affect their life in the way that it means that they don't get to continue for many more years. She would like to get people more time post-diagnosis. And bowel cancer is the fourth most diagnosed cancer in the fourth most common cancer in the UK, I should say. But because of its nature, people tend to avoid going to the doctor. So as per the wishes of Deborah and Heather and Cancer Research UK and me, I would like to just remind you, if you don't already know, all the things you should be looking out for. So if there's any change in your bowel habits, we've got to get over the taboo of talking about poo, guys and gals. So if you notice any changes, anything that's unusual for you, if you have any pain or discomfort in your abdomen, if you find you're going to the loo more often, if you're not going to the loo as much, if there's blood when you poo, any of these things, get yourself to the GP. They have seen it all before and they will be glad you walked in the door. Unintentional rhyme there, darlings. And we've got to avoid the shame. And actually, when I knew I was talking to Heather, I actually ended up speaking to my kids about it all. And I thought, it is something we feel naturally very private about. And there's nothing wrong with feeling private about going to the loo. But if there's something wrong, you do need to let someone know so they can check you out. And most of the time, it won't be cancer. But sometimes it might be, and the earlier it's caught, the better it turns out. Right, on to the next bit. What do you need to know? So Heather is a lovely mum. She has given birth to 3 children. She teaches aerobics to kids. And we had such a great conversation, and I don't need to say any more than that. I will leave you with her very lovely voice, and I'll see you on the other side. Heather, it's absolutely such a pleasure to have you over today. And it's funny, as you start to sit down, I found myself feeling suddenly incredibly emotional because I've had your daughter's voice, Deborah, in my ears for the last couple of days. I did something I never do. I listened back to the entirety of our conversation from when I recorded with her. And I said I never listened back because, like lots of people, I find listening to myself back excruciating, like horrible. But it was so lovely to have her voice in my ears. And now, not only is this the first time I've ever had the mother of one of my guests do the podcast, so that's a nice thing, but you're sitting in exactly the same seat where she was sitting, as am I, in the same place I was sitting. And it's just bringing all of those memories back from when I first got to have such a great conversation with Deborah. And the timing is completely appropriate because we are putting this out in April, which is all Bowel Cancer Awareness Month.
Yeah.
And this was helped organise by the Bowel Babe Fund and the relationship they have with Cancer Research UK. And so I suppose we can start with that, because you have sort of continue the mantle of this.
We have. At first, we didn't know how it was going to pan out. Amazed at the amount raised, but Deborah was so adamant before she died she wanted the Bowel Babe Fund set up. Mm-hmm. And when it was, we thought, 250,000 would be amazing. It's now reached, 13 million. So it's just unbelievable. And then I thought it would finish. But as a family, we all thought, she works so hard, you know, Sophie. We've got to keep this going and keep this awareness going. And the awareness and the research will help save more lives. And wouldn't that be a great thing? I know Deborah's up there saying, come on, Mum. Let's get even more money, you know, and more awareness out there. And I'm amazed at how many people can now talk about poo.
Isn't it incredible? Isn't it incredible? And I can tell you, I've got first-hand stories of people who have gone to the doctor and got themselves checked out purely because of the fact that Deborah and all the work she did and all her communicating just flipped the taboo of being open about your bodies and what's happening there and going to the doctor and just getting checked out if anything is irregular.
I was brought up in an era where you didn't talk about poo or anything. Mm. And so I was oblivious to the symptoms of bowel cancer. In fact, I don't think I'd even heard of bowel cancer. And so, you know, it was all new to me as a mother. And that now has changed, and I hope more people will now see symptoms and signs. It's on toilet rolls, it's on, you know, packaging, and I think Deborah dressing up as a poo was the best thing.
So. It's kind of phenomenal, isn't it, really? And actually, what I love is what you said about growing up in a house where you didn't talk about poo. I actually had a conversation with one of my kids last night about it, and I thought this would never have happened when I was a child, actually.
No.
Those things were just private. And private. Instinctively, I think humans do like to be private about going to the loo. I don't think that's an unusual thing, but I think not being embarrassed to approach a doctor if something is out of the normal. Yeah. That's the thing we're really trying to highlight, isn't it?
It is. And the more people that don't mind going and say, my poo's not quite right, it will get people out there. And
yes.
That's good. And the awareness is so important to be recognised. So.
Yeah.
And then the research, because when Deborah was first diagnosed, the drug that gave her an extra couple of years was not even available at the beginning. And so, you know, and now more and more drugs are being, researched. Yeah. And I really hope in my grandchildren's time that bowel cancer will not be as Deborah had to live through. You can live with it rather than die of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I can see that, as you say, the science is moving so fast and the funding will...
Yeah,
just
and that's
such
why
good things.
I think, come on, let's get more funding.
But I'm not at all surprised that you've kept it going. I mean, I just think that there's so much energy around what she set up. And also, it's a relevance, but it's also the fact that I imagine, and forgive me if anything I'm saying doesn't resonate with you, but if something like that happened to one of my kids, the idea of a positive coming out of a negative like would mean, would just help me.
I think it does. I think it's my therapy. I never heal as such. You learn to live around it. And the positivity Deborah gave to us, you can learn so much from your children, you know. As a mother, you give to your children, but also your children give so much back. And I now realise that Deborah gave back as much as or more than what we gave to her. And to take that on board is what I've got, you know, all of us have to do. We have to be positive, live life, and always find something in the day to be, you know, positive about. And I think she left me with that because I could have been quite a negative person. I always had a half full cup, not a half, half empty cup, not a half full cup. And whereas Deborah would be, it's full. It's fine, it's full. And she's taught me quite a lot.
I can see that. And I think also that sometimes when the person is not physically here anymore, it's where you see all the echoes and reflections of everything that they... up around you, it's kind of extraordinary, and it keeps them part of the present for the whole family. It keeps her name around, and there's no reason why you would not talk about Deborah and all those echoes.
You're right. I think keeping her name alive makes her feel closer, and that's great. It is a healing part for me. Part of me also feels sometimes, I've never really, you can't just ignore that, you know, there's always something. But then when Deborah was here, there was always something going on. She was, there was never any quiet time. And I did think at one stage when she died, my life would change, and it has changed, but not to the quiet, sitting in, moping stage. I grieve her, but I grieve her doing things.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. And I suppose that that active grief is something you can never even, you don't even know how you're going to feel when you're in the new chapter, do you?
No, you don't.
You can't picture it. No matter how much you know, you've been told that's where you're headed. It's just an impossibility to imagine.
For us, particularly for me, for 5 years, my life was her or her, the children or the hospital or the chemotherapy after effects that she would come to, or the steroid rage, you know, phoning me at 2 a.m. And that's fine. That was my life. And then when she died, I thought, what is my life now? I could actually perhaps go away for the weekend and not be contacted. But I can't. I still, that's not me. I still feel I should be around. And I've got 2 other children. And now I really want to give them perhaps the time that I didn't, because they understood. But Deborah did take up a lot of time.
Yeah, I think in any family, what is it they say, you know, the family is as happy as its least happy member, and also the whole family has to go to where the attention needs to be. That's completely...
And they were all on board with it, and that's nice. It's not as though it's, they've been brilliant, and they were there for her as well. But perhaps my underlying thing is guilt that I didn't spend so much time with them. Because I had to do something every night, you know, in the hospital when Deborah was there. But I love the fact when they all just moved in the next day when Deborah came back. One suitcase came in, another child, another, you know, and I thought, and they went, we're staying here. And Deborah went, this is like the sleepovers we had as children. And there was big grins on their faces. And I thought, that's good.
Well, I think that's actually more than good. I think it's pretty phenomenal, because it's obviously all the foundation of, you know, right from their childhood. That's when families get really, when it goes to the really tough moments, the really emotional, intense, all those layers that have been laid down over the years, it all just suddenly becomes the scaffolding to hold you guys up through those things.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, but also Deborah enjoyed, if that's the right word, she wasn't going to lie there and wait for death. And what would I have done? I thought that's what it was going to be. You come home to die, you lie there and you wait until you die. Oh, no. No, that was not at all. We're going to have margaritas. I don't like margaritas, but we had to have them. We have to have cocktails and loads of things and going out. And I went, Deborah, why have you just got a new pair of shoes delivered? And she went, I know what you're going to say. I can't even walk, but don't they look cool? And I went, and even more, I went, they are really expensive. She went, I know, and you're going to say you're not going to get the wear out of them, but Eloise can have them. So, you know, and you have to laugh about that, because we had a normal mother-child conversation. What a lot of money. And yes, you're not going to get the wear. And then I think, what thing to say? But she loved them. She looked good in them.
Yep.
wear them.
No, I think, and it's, I mean, I remember getting a text message that I'm sure she sent to lots of people in her phone book, saying, "This is the message I didn't want to have to write. I'm heading home. The treatment has finished." And I thought, okay, this is where it goes quiet. And then obviously the absolute opposite happened.
You're right. I thought it would go quiet, and I thought, no more going up to the Royal Marsden every night. And it was surreal, really, when she came home. But it was the busiest, happiest time, even though we knew what the ending would be. It was good.
And I guess some very precious memories.
Very precious memories. And I think one of the memories, and I haven't told you, a few days before she died, my nails were looking really bad. They are painted today. And she went, "Mum, you really need to look after your nails." And I went, "Oh, I haven't got time." She said, "Then make time. Sit here." And she was doing my cuticles. She said, "Your cuticles." And I went, "Deborah, I haven't got time to do my cuticles." And she was so frail. And she held my hand with a bony hand. And she did my cuticles. And I thought, wow. You know, how lovely is that?
Yeah.
And but then Deborah was the first one. I was 60 years old and I'd never had nail polish because I'd always bitten my nails really short. And she'd booked me for my birthday a gel nail. And I didn't even know what gel was. And I went, I'm not having that. I don't even have any nails that were bitten. She said, "That's why you're going to have gel." And I went, "Will it hurt?" She went, "It's only gel and it will come off later and they'll take it off." And from that day on, I have been addicted to gel nail varnish. And it stopped me biting my nails.
Oh, I might need to take
and
that
so
advice.
That's the, it's the only thing. And I was so proud that I've now got nails that I've never had. And, but yeah, you know, I learned to stop biting them after 60 years,
wow.
But only with nail varnish on.
Yes, that's probably good advice. But I love that story about you and Deborah and having that moment with your cuticles, because that intimacy and the care,
yes,
and just having those moments, that's...
Because we were all massaging her legs and her feet, and then she... To do that to me, I thought, oh, that means so much.
It's an expression of something, isn't it?
Yeah, because I said to her, "What can I do to help you?" And she went, "You can just care for me, because that's what I want." And that's what we all did. We just all mucked in. And it wasn't sad. It was, you know, have a nice lollies at 3 a.m, because if she wanted a nice lolly, because obviously, you know, that would be quite soothing for her.
Mm.
We all had ice lollies at 3 a.m, you know. And, yeah, it was, I'm grateful I saw into this world. And I said to her, "I will see you out of this world." And I'm grateful to be able to have done that. But I didn't realise it would hit me a year on.
Yeah, well, I suppose, I mean...
And it really did hit me a year on.
Well, firstly,
with
I'm
anxiety,
so sorry you've had to,
you know,
go through all of it. It's a very unusual thing that the reason so many people came to know you and Deborah and the rest of the family is through this very same thing that caused you an extraordinary amount of hurt.
Yes.
And I mean, the anxiety, I know you've spoken about that before.
Yeah.
And I suppose all these things you were carrying, because you're at the epicenter of this, her mother. And yeah, I guess it just, there's only so long you can keep going without your body saying, "I need to find a way out of all these
and
things."
Rest, I was living off of adrenaline, I think, and I'd been used to 5 years of roller coaster life, because that's what anybody's cancer journey,
yeah,
is roller coaster. You have good, you have bad. And Deb has always been like that throughout her whole life, even before cancer. And I know my mum would say, you've got fun and games there. And she said she's going to give you great happy times, but she's going to give you really annoying, tough times as well. And all the way through her life, that is how she was. Not an easy child, a very happy, full of life child, but very headstrong.
Yes, well, we will return to that in a bit, because I very much want to not make this a whole conversation about the fact Deborah, you know, was diagnosed with cancer.
True.
It's what happened to her, but it's not the essence of your family or her or you or any of those things. But the only last thing, I was really, again, this is incredibly unique, but what is it like to grieve someone that is also grieved by so many members of the public who never met her? I can't imagine what that energy must feel like.
It's given me comfort to know how many people she did touch, but sadness that we didn't know until she died how many people she touched. I'm proud. I'm so proud. And Deborah worked so hard, and she kept saying to us, "Are you proud of me?" And I went, "Deborah." And the last words I said to her were, "We're so proud of you. It's time to rest now, darling." And within 10 minutes, that was the last breath she took, because we had to give her that you've done all you can do now rest. Because every time I said to her, "Deborah, why don't you sleep?" She said, "I can sleep when I'm dead. I've got too much to do." And that was always her reaction. So that's why we never really slept for that whole time she was back. We just kept going. The fun kept going. The outings kept going. You know, the book, the rose, the clothes.
The damehood
was surreal, and I never did shower for Prince William. I'm sorry if I smelt. I didn't have time. My hair was a mess, but it was what it was. And looking back, that is surreal. And I think for me, the funeral, none of us cried, because we just all held it together. But for me to see how strong Hugo and Eloise were walking behind their mother's coffin, and the only little hiccup we had, and I will now profess I actually sort of slipped off one of my heels, and I can remember Ben behind me went, "Well, good job there wasn't a camera near, you know," and Eloise having a little giggle. And I thought, Deborah would be in there saying, "Trust you, Mum." But it was lovely that Hugo, her four men carried her coffin, her father, her husband, her son and her brother.
Mm.
But how, you know, fitting that they should be the last ones to carry her. And
absolutely.
I think that was lovely, and I was very proud of that. But because it was so public, her dying, it's not normal. It's not normal for a mother or her husband, children and family to have to deal with that as well.
Yeah, it's definitely
when we're
unusual.
Not that type of family. We're not out there in the public family. Mm. That's not what we are. We just got in that because of Deborah and Deborah's ability to communicate and do what she's done.
Absolutely.
Which is great. And we will continue her legacy. But it's different for us. We're not natural to it. It's just us. You will get what you see. And that's what we are. And I hope we will do Deborah proud as she did us proud.
Absolutely. Oh, that's a given. That's an absolute given.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, if I could go back in time, what was happening in your life? What were you up to when you had your first baby, which was Deborah?
I was very young. I met Alistair at 14 at school.
Oh, wow.
I left school at 15 to work in a bank because it was the last year you could leave early. Mm-hmm. I desperately wanted to be a teacher, but due to circumstances, I had to leave to work. And Alistair went on to university. He was 2 years older. So we got engaged at 16 and 18, and he went to university, and everybody said, it won't last, so that's fine. You can get married after he's graduated, that's it. And 6 weeks after he graduated, 3 years down the line, we got married. And so, you know, it's, and we've been married nearly 47 years, actually. So,
that's incredible.
Yeah, and we were young. I hadn't left the village because I come from Dorset, and it's a very close-knit village and mm-hmm. family. And then I moved up to London, and I can remember my mum saying, well, we'll never see you again. I went, Mum, it's only 2 hours. And she went, well, I'm not going to be up there. And I was so homesick. I was so homesick because I was the classic. I lived opposite my sisters, mm-hmm. next to my mum. And for me, London was so big that I said to Alistair, I can't live in London. And so we went on the map. And it happened to be Woking, mm-hmm. because we could get on the M3 very quickly,
yeah,
and a good commute to London. So we thought, fine. And the homesickness took me about almost a year. And every weekend, Alistair kept his promise and drove me back home. And it became less and less. And we brought Mum up, and she went, oh, it's normal up here, you know. Yes, Mum, they are still people. And then she became, oh, you've got big shops. And she had this thing about coats. And so we would buy her a new coat, and she'd go back and show everybody she got this coat in London, you know. And it became quite sweet. And Deborah then was born 4 years into our marriage. We made sure. So I was 23. And that was late. Everybody thought, 4 years down the road and marriage, you know, why? Because in those days,
yeah,
you had children as soon as you got married.
Yeah.
And so we didn't, so we were a bit different. And it came as, you know, when I had this baby, I didn't have family near. I found it actually quite lonely.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And as a mother, my husband worked in London all hours. If it wasn't for the people I met at my baby group, who were friends for life, and I needed those, and the neighbours I had, the support was great. And my friends and meant so much when you haven't got family close to help you.
Mm.
And Deborah was born with congenital dislocated hips. And I can remember saying, because in those days, they took your baby away and put them in a nursery in the hospital. And then they said, your baby's got CDH. And I went, well, what's that?
Yeah.
And they explained this long congenital dislocation. And I went, well, is she dead? And they went, no, have you not seen her? And I went, well, no, you know. So they bought her, and I went, well, has she got any legs and hips, you know? And they went, yeah. And so that was quite a trauma.
That's hugely traumatic.
You're not given any information 42 years ago as such. Mm. And then we had to deal with her being splintered out, and she was determined to crawl even at 6 months in a commando crawl. And she was an energetic baby even then. And when the splints came off at 11 months, 12, she got up and walked and never stopped. So it didn't.
She's thinking, I'm dying to get those things off.
Any harm. And, but she never slept. Never slept as a baby, never slept as a toddler.
There's a pattern here, isn't there?
Never slept as a teenager, and never slept when she was dying until she died. So I think it was what she was going to always be.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think that there's definitely an essence of how someone is, their spirit. Like,
yeah, it was her spirit.
She was like a tree trunk, you know, with the rings coming out, but the essence of the tree is.
And perhaps I was too controlling a mother, or tried to be, but perhaps how would Deb have turned out if I didn't? I always wanted to win the battles. But Deborah did as well. So you can imagine that as a temper, two-year-old toddler, having big tempers, they were doubly big because I would have them as well. So, you know, as a grandmother, I can handle tempers. No, that you just ignore them.
What do you think the shift is with that? Why is it that grandparents and their grandchildren can handle, they don't have that same fire?
I just laugh at them. I felt...
I just laugh at them.
I do. Whereas as a mother, I felt everybody was judging me.
Yeah, and I think
if
sometimes...
If my child had a temper out in a shop...
Oh, yeah.
I felt everybody was judging me if I didn't... If I ignored it.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
I hope now people don't feel that, because I would never judge a child screaming on the floor and the mother... Because we've been there, done that. But I was 20, what, by the time she was 24 and I had another hot baby as well, I felt people were judging me, actually.
Yeah.
And that makes you feel, oh, am I doing the right job?
So much pressure.
You know, I have to show that, you know, you can't do this. But, of course, a child at 2 are learning their feelings.
Yes.
And it's made me, I hope, a good coach. I've worked with children now for 40 years. And I can see how children develop. And that's just part of the development.
So what age children do you work with?
I actually work with them from 4 months. But really, the 4 months, I hang them upside down. We roll them. We exercise them. But we have fun and communicate with them. And really, I feel my job is... I'm there for the mum. If they've had a bad night, that's fine. We all have bad nights. Come and have a time with your child and just be there and enjoy the company of other parents as well. And I think for me, if I'd had that, it would have helped because, the loneliness is hard when you're a new mum.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've got 2 children and one was Prem. Sarah was a good baby, but you had to feed her because she was jaundiced, so you had to feed her more and wake her, and then you had a really difficult toddler and no help, and but we got through it, and she was really fun to have around, and again, she would come in and she would bring the outside in a wheelbarrow of dirt and tip it on the cream carpet and say, I'm making a garden. And you'd say, oh, lovely, darling, but not indoors. And, you know, out it would go. So I was perhaps relaxed with her, and she was very artistic and wanted to make snow out of paper and all over the sitting room, and that's fine. So she had that, whereas, and she always... wanted to be on the go, which is why obviously she went into gymnastics.
Yes, I spoke
and
to her about all of that.
4 or 5, she was training 6 hours a week.
Yes.
But she still had more energy. I thought that would perhaps help her to sleep, but no.
So did the gymnastics, was that going alongside your work with...
No, I'd never been to a gymnastics club before, but I took Deborah along when she was 3 and... She obviously had ability and she was spotted and asked to train more. And I said, no, she's too young. And they said, then put on a tracksuit and come in with her.
Ooh.
And that is how I sort of became very interested and a coach.
Oh, wow. So it was directly linked to that?
Directly linked.
I didn't realize
that. When she was
that.
3, and she'd be 43 this year, so that was 40 years ago.
Wow, so that's quite a thing that ended up being something you've done for decades.
Oh.
It was all instigated by this outing with your little girl.
Yes, and my love of it, and yeah. Isn't that strange how, as a mother, your child can lead you down a different path?
Definitely.
Because
definitely.
I also worked in a bank for 9 years. So, you know, it led me to actually do what I originally wanted to do, which was teach.
Yes, exactly. And so you work with babies, but do you work in schools?
No,
or is it all
in
after
a gymnastics club.
Okay.
So a purpose-built...
So people come to...
They come to us. There. A purpose-built gymnastics club where you've got pits, dug in foam pits and things and trapeze. But I'm very fortunate. I also now work in a club. We've been open 8 years, which have circus skills.
Yeah, I remember Deborah telling me about
that. So Deborah loved it. She's always wanted to run away with the circus, which was quite difficult when the circus came to town at 16. I would have to
check
make
she's
sure
still
she
home at the end of their run.
Yeah, and she's always loved circus, always. And when she knew, and then she realised how difficult it is to walk on a tight wire or swing on the aerial hoops.
Can you do all these things
then? Oh. I can teach them, I can't do them. I had a go at the aerials.
Just get in the hoop. It's fine. I can't do it myself.
But I did have a go at the aerial silks and pulling myself upside down. I was agony for the next week, but you know.
Aerial silks, that's really hard. That's when you like twist yourself up, isn't it? And then they swing you at the bottom like that.
And you put yourself holding up, get your legs up in the air. But you know, it's fun. And
I would love a go, to be fair.
Exactly.
Was it core strength you need?
Yeah, it's core. But I wish I was 20 years younger and then I could do it more. But age shouldn't be a barrier.
No.
If you want to go upside down, you go upside down.
I think that's going to be my quote of the day.
And because did you do handstands? I used to do handstands.
Yeah.
Cartwheels.
All of that.
Handstands up against a wall, I would still do when Deborah and Sarah and then Ben showing them how to do, do it. We'd all do, I can't do a handstand against the wall now. I know jolly well it's not going to, but people of my age can, so that's good. And I might do it at home if somebody holds my legs up. But
we can have a go after we finish recording.
We could.
Clear a space for us.
Handstand against the wall.
What do you learn about parenting when you're teaching children? Because teaching children in a group, you must be a bit more objective about what works and what doesn't work.
What I actually do as well is I work with parents with their children.
Mm.
So under the age of 3, every parent or guardian or grandmother or comes with that child.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I love my job so much, but it's actually dealing with the parent.
Yes.
To know how they can help that child.
Mm-hmm.
So I can deal with the child, but if the parent doesn't support that way, that's difficult.
Yes.
So, and we actually, I think if the parent can give the confidence to the child, that's what, forget whether they're going to be a top gymnast. I think it's for the basic of all sport. You learn to balance, you learn to jump, you learn to hold your body weight, you learn to go upside down, spatial awareness. So important for everything.
Yes.
And then the gymnastics and the circus skills are on top of that. And the social thing, learning to take turns, learning to share, and learning to have patience. I wouldn't say I had patience with my children, but I can see now it's all part in the children building their confidence. And please don't knock your child back telling them they can't do anything, because then they think they can't. Find something they can do and then work on that.
Yeah. Yes.
Even if it's only throwing a ball, that's great. They've achieved something really, really important, and that's good. And then they'll build on it.
So when I spoke to Deborah, there was a lot of conversation that went towards her natural competitiveness. Is that something that you think is something you can build on with a kid, or is that always there? With her, was that there from the get-go? Is that just a nature thing, do you think?
No, perhaps it was me pushing her behind. I think without the support of a parent, I was actually having this conversation with a friend, and they were saying, oh, but a child, you know, and will he do it or won't do it? Yes, I agree, the child has to be behind it. Mm. But if the parent is not behind that child, you will never get your top sportsman, because it's the parent that has to commit 30 hours a week to take them.
Right.
To training,
yes.
To be there, to competitions.
Mm-hmm.
So you need the parent on board,
yes.
Or both parent or whatever. You cannot do it. If the child's got natural talent and you pick them out, that's fantastic. But without the support of the parent, it won't work.
Yes, I can see that now you've said that. That does make complete sense.
And it is hard, so...
Yeah, you've got to give over.
What then suffers if you've got more than one child is the other children.
Right.
Because how do you split yourself if they do different sports? And that is where the guilt comes in.
Because Deborah was doing like 40 hours a week or something.
Yeah, she was training 30 hours a week.
Mm.
Sarah, it meant, couldn't really do much.
Unless she was doing gymnastics
as well.
Unless
she was doing gymnastics.
Yeah.
And she did do gym, but not to that level.
Right.
Because it just wasn't suitable for her. And she did go into tennis and hockey, which was great, but it's fitting it in.
Yes.
And that always, and so I would say, you can tell I'm a middle child, you know, and I do think that that is the, you know, the disadvantage, if I'm honest. Although Alistair would be there with Sarah and do different things, so that was good, because I would be coaching evenings and weekends with Deborah, and so Sarah had a one-to-one with Daddy, so that was quite nice. And then 10 years later, when Ben came along and wanted to start doing things at five, they were 15, 16, so it was fine. And so Ben was like an only child, and he went into, they all did gym for quite a while, but he went into tennis quite seriously at five.
Mm.
But then I could take him to tennis every night.
Yes.
Because I had that freedom. So I don't, you know, I don't condemn any mother, I think, or father or carer. It is really hard to manage that. If they and you can pursue that sport, that's amazing. But if you are working...
Yeah, just...
And they're at school, it's hard, so don't beat yourself up about it. Let them explore all sports.
Yes.
And see what they want as well.
And all their passions.
And all their passions. And if they really are passionate, then and you can support it, that would be amazing.
Yeah, but I suppose even just turning up to one of your classes and getting that community and being engaged is...
Yeah, and once a week... That's great. That's super as well. And
I wish you were near here. I would definitely bring my kids to you. You sound like you've been so lovely with them.
Oh, no, it's not always. I will be strict with them. But yeah, no, I
haven't seen
it. It has changed in 40 years. I think parents have a much tougher job now.
Really? That's
interesting. I really do, because most parents do work.
Mm.
You know, it's very unusual to find somebody that can stay at home all the time.
And what else would you say is the way that parenting has changed?
Guilt that they give in to their children, and I'm the old fashioned that no means no, and consequences has to be carried through. And I see more and more parents find that difficult.
Well, I think one of the shifts is that, and it's well-intentioned and probably still finding the balance, but we want to make sure that children feel heard, feel they have, you know, a voice at the table, that their feelings are taken into account. And that puts us in quite a difficult predicament, because the child might say, I don't want to do this. So you as an adult might see the benefits of what they're going to do, but then you also can see them feeling muted, feeling their feelings are diminished, their emotions don't care. So it puts you in this quandary of going, do I just say, well, okay, I'm the grown-up, this is what's happening, or do I go, I see your anger, I see your frustration, let's let that live, let's give that room.
So, yeah, and that's why I think it's far more difficult, because I was brought up and you didn't get heard.
Simple times.
You know, you didn't get heard, you don't have a voice. The adult is the boss, if you like, and what they say goes. No, because actually the relationship, then you're almost scared to, you couldn't go out of the boundaries. But I did try sometimes, you know, and so I wasn't that easy in a child. But no, I think it does get harder, and children are listened to, and that's a good thing. Children need to be listened to. But I think there has to be a balance between, you know, you have to learn right from wrong. And when do you start given those rights from wrong? And I think the earlier the better for the most important things.
Yes, I think so. I think, yeah, and it's about having a sort of your family's, I don't know, moral compass, I suppose, and the things that matter to you under your roof.
Yeah, and what doesn't matter, and I put my hands up because it mattered so much to me at 24, is matching socks. And everybody will laugh. I would never put a child in on matching socks. And if they wanted to wear a summer dress in the middle of winter, I wouldn't allow, you know, I would say no, no, no. We'd have a battle. People come in on matching socks. They've come in. It doesn't matter. My grandchildren, I won't tell you what they go out in. And it's fine. It's not the end of the world. But for me, 40 years ago, it was the end of the world.
But maybe it was about something about what it felt like it conveyed, like being organised, being together, being presentable. It's not always literal, is it?
No, you're
right,
actually.
Or maybe you just love it when socks are together. I don't know. It can be really literal.
How sad is that? That I thought it was so important that socks had to be in pairs and everything had to match. And you're right. Perhaps it's what I was trying to present to the outside world.
Yeah, a sense of something proper.
Proper.
A proper thing is happening here.
But don't feel you have to. And actually, it leads me on to, I said to Deborah, I can't be seen in a costume. Look, I've flab, I've got rolls. And she went, Mum, enhance your body. It's keeping you alive. Look at it as not a beauty thing. It is beautiful because it keeps you alive and mine is dying. And embrace it. Embrace it for what it is. And I am so lucky that actually, yeah, I wear what I want to wear. And if people don't like it, that's fine. And I am lucky that I am still alive. And I could, yeah, and my body, yeah, it doesn't matter. Of course you try and look after it, but don't be shy of it. And
so it's changed your relationship with yourself in that way?
It has, actually.
Yeah.
And my wrinkles and everything. It's fine. It's what I am. I've had, you know, nearly 67 years of happiness and sadness and ups and downs. But we're still here and we're still going to have fun, even though I've lost my daughter. We will still live and find joy but always will remember what she, you know. I do think she was given to me for a reason, and I do think she couldn't have lived more than 40 years because we'd all be exhausted. I don't think she could have done another 40 years of what she was doing, but she would have tried, you know.
When she first was diagnosed and she dressed up as a poo and put so much energy into all of that, as a mother, how did you handle your instinct to sometimes say to her, slow down?
I didn't, because she never would. I mean, if you, as a teenager, she was always on the go.
I know she as wrecked your house child, as a party as well.
Oh, yeah, always partying. But actually, I quite like a party. I mean, we would always have Christmas Eve parties for a big number of people and then still be up at 4 o'clock in the morning wrapping Christmas presents, you know.
Okay, I'm definitely seeing a whole pattern here.
And thinking, why
the whole
did we do
family
this?
Don't sleep much.
Although I do like my sleep, but I don't get it. But and Deborah would, one of Deborah's, she was 7 years old, said, Mum, why did God not put more hours in a day? Because I really can't get everything done. And I thought, wow.
Yeah,
for
wow.
a seven-year-old to say that, and then she would still be trying to do everything all the way through her life. But that's okay. It's okay. She, you know, you get out perhaps what you put in, but she did exhaust us and her.
Mm-hmm.
And but then would I want to sit and just, I love sitting to read, but I don't want to do that all day, every day. And yes, Alistair will be 70 next year. He's still working,
mm-hmm.
still working and loving it. Well, yes, he would like to cut down, but actually we're not ready to do that
yeah.
yet. I think Deborah made sure we would be busy.
Yes, I can
with,
see that.
You know, the grandchildren, our other children, and most importantly, making awareness and the Balbay Fun continue. And
yes.
Her legacy. But no, she wasn't an easy teenager. I don't think any of my grandchildren will be easy.
It's not what we're looking for, though, is it? Really?
No, you're right. Why look for...
You're sort of rooting for them when they're spirited, I think. Like, come on then.
That's just what I said to her mum this week. She went, oh, I'm so sorry, Heather. And I went, I love their different spirit. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. A little bit of defiance and sometimes quite like, okay, yeah, why? See what happens if you go through that door, if you ask that question, if you, you know, push that button. Like,
true,
sort of,
true.
You sort of get it. Actually, when I was listening back to the chat with Deborah, the things that really jumped out. Firstly, she talks a lot about parties and dressing up, and it seems to have emanated from your household, from her childhood. She said you guys were always having parties. She said she'd find you in the garden, people round, rosé on the go. So this is a positive thing, definitely.
I think, yeah. And she actually said, and the Ben and Sarah, but Deborah said, I've had a good life. I loved my childhood. And I think, wow, that means something.
It's
because
huge.
And she loved school. Mm. I know children don't like school, but Deborah loved school.
Mm.
She embraced everything that was going on. And actually, yeah, all my children did. So we had fun and school was fun. But I think perhaps there's more pressure on children now. I wanted them to do well. And I'm proud they did do well.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as they were happy, that's the main thing. And yeah, we were happy. And I think if you can show them all aspects of life, I think that is good as well. You know,
definitely.
I mean, particularly I was brought up, you know, in my mum had four girls. Two up, two down. Luxuries were not there, but we learnt to knit. We didn't even have a television for age, you know.
Mm.
So, but it was fun. We had fun.
Mm.
But different fun out in the garden and climbing trees and going for walks. And but never had a birthday party all the way. And so I think that's why I went a bit mad when I had my own house. My own children.
I see.
I made sure they would have birthday parties.
Well, it's continued definitely in that legacy. You've given that to all your children, I'm sure. Because I remember Deborah saying that Ben is very good with parties.
Very.
Yes.
Yeah. And now Sarah had a big 40th.
There you go.
And decided she'd go all out, having said, I don't do parties.
No.
And it was the biggest party for a 40-year-old, yeah, you could have.
But these are the things you remember. It's funny because... It can seem like a, you know, we think of it as not trivial, but as in the periphery, you know, the parties, the celebrations, the dressing up. But look at the impact. Look at how it invites people. It's like a big light. it's like something you want to head towards, I think, those good things. And then that's what you have in your head and in your heart to hold.
And I think we always encourage them to bring friends home, because I wasn't allowed to ever bring a friend home. And I love the fact that they bring their friends home. And I love the fact, not just them, but my grandchildren, all four of them. Grandma, can I bring a friend round with me? Yeah, of course you can.
Open door.
Open door. And we ended up with, sort of two grandchildren and five friends, but that's fine. That's great. And that will always be there. And I love the fact that all four of the grandchildren, including, you know, the older ones, Deborah's two, and my other two, feel they can do that. And they feel comfortable there. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And I do love a party house, but we do have a bungalow now. But we can still party in the garden. You know,
I'm sure you can still trash a bungalow.
You're right, you can actually. Even worse, because the bedrooms are on the same floor, aren't they?
Yeah. Just get lost in there.
True.
Well, it's just, I suppose it's such an interesting thing, because when I spoke to Deborah, she said that the illness, her diagnosis, had actually made her a more present parent. And she felt that she got to know her children,
yes,
but also they got to know her.
I know.
And I think that you would never, ever wish any of these things on anyone. And you don't need, you know, traumatic diagnoses to make you see the good stuff that's in your family. But it doesn't mean it is okay to reflect on what good can come out of something bad.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Deborah loved her job, as you know, as a deputy head, and was hoping for a headship. And when Eloise, her second child, she went back to work after Hugo, and then Eloise was born, and she said to me, "Mum, I can't be the mother I want to be, and I can't be I can't be the teacher I want to be, because I just feel torn." So I said, "Oh, so does that mean you're giving up work?" And she went, "No, it means I'm going full time." And I went, so she said, "You're not going to like it." And I went, "No, if that's what you want, then, but don't regret it." Because she was working part-time, but if you work part-time, she can't do what she wants to get her teeth into. So my first thing was, "We'll help you, but please don't regret it." She said, "No, I won't regret it." And then that continued, and it was hard because the children, but we were quite involved. In fact, we've always been all family involved, you're all hands on. But you're right, the children did say, "Mum, we see more of you now you've got cancer. It's not nice you've got cancer, but it's nice we see more of you." And so that was the positive. I think, and it is an amazing positive, that they will always remember her because they got closer. And with COVID, I think we have to take the positives. The negatives were terrible for us because of not being able to see her and all the control in hospitals. But the positive was they were so close as their little unit family, that how lovely to have had that extra almost year being locked up together.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
And really knowing each other. But then the sadness that they miss Mummy perhaps more because they knew her more.
Yeah.
And the more you love somebody, the greater the grief when you lose them.
That's very true. But then grief is always the extension of love. That's how I...
Yeah, it has to be.
Yeah. And the love doesn't go. You still love that person.
You still love that person.
Yeah.
But I don't know about you, but the more you see somebody, the more you get used to them being there. And then when you don't see them, the harder it gets. So for me, I saw Deborah a lot.
Yeah.
And so when I lost her, it was massive. Mm. Whereas if you think that they're working and they're bored on work or something,
yeah,
and you're not going to see them for a few months, that's fine. So I have to sometimes think, ooh, she's just away. And
yeah,
you know, and that was how I originally coped with it, because then the time gets longer and longer, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And so the grief gets different.
Yeah. I mean, the whole process is incredibly cruel.
And really, the reality hits him more, particularly when I look at her and think, oh, you had so much more to give and you loved life more than anybody else I knew. And she did. She loved life and all aspects of life. And she wanted to do so much more good in this world.
Mm-hmm.
But then it is, she did what she did. And I am grateful for having her. I am. I am grateful for having all my children. And every child's different. And like I said, you know, Deborah is Deborah. And sometimes I can remember going in, I literally had to get away. I think she'd been home with us to, you know, on her coming home on palliative care. And it was about 3 weeks in and we were told it would probably only be about 5 days max. And on the third week, I can remember going out saying to somebody, I'm going to kill her if she keeps on like this. And then we sort of both burst out laughing, saying, well, that's the wrong thing to say. And I thought, yeah, but thanks. I've got out and I'm going to go back. And it was all right. It was just, you know, a normal mother-daughter relationship.
Absolutely.
You get on each other's nerves, don't you, sometimes?
Yes, you really do. And I think with you talking about having more to give, I suppose, I mean, it's sitting from where I like, there was so much that did come out of it. I can't really, you know, it's such an extraordinary thing and how much she did do in that time. But there's always going to be a feeling of an untold, because she was too young to die.
I know. And I realised how much effort she had to put in to stay alive to get that done.
Mm.
Because she could have quite easily have just, that's it.
Absolutely.
But she did the opposite.
Yeah.
And now, and yes, she did have pain. No, she wouldn't be drugged. And yes, I did get cross with her, saying, you know, please take some of these. And she went, no, because I want to do more. And she was fighting against resting. And, you know, basically, no, just leave me. I'll be fine. I'm going to get on with it.
Do you think there's a pressure that comes on when people are looking at her, looking for her to be this emblem of a positive take on a, you know, a limiting diagnosis? Do you think that came with something you have to carry?
I don't think people need to carry that. I think Deborah knew her limited time meant she had to do as much as she could.
She just felt driven.
And driven, because she's always been a very driven girl. Therefore, if I've only got 5 days, I better do it. And she did more and more as the time went on.
Right.
And she pushed herself beyond limits that most people wouldn't be able to do. And I think, you know, she got through everything. And the last thing was the toilet rolls. I can always remember that. And that was the weekend before she died. And we could see her everything was failing. And she went, I've got to get this done. I've got to see this through. And I went, Deborah, you've done enough, darling. You mustn't worry about this. And she, you know, she was really struggling, but she got that through and she got that toilet roll message out there. And then I think was the time for her to go. I really do. And she'd said what she wanted to say to the children and made sure, the children knew how much she loved them, but also that they had to continue with their lives and join them and not to use her as an excuse. And she went, "You don't use me dying as an excuse for messing up your life, because I'll still be watching you."
Wow.
So
that's very, I think that's an incredible thing to give them. It also gives them permission to really live.
Yeah, it does. And for all of us to live.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that was her real, just because she had her life cut terribly short, not for the rest of the family to have their lives finished.
Well, yes, exactly.
And as a mother, that's very easily done, because I said to her, "But Deborah, what am I going to do?" And she went, "You would find your life back and you will live it, because I can't, Mum, so you must do it for me."
Yes.
And however much I would like to sometimes just sit and take a moment, I know I need to be out there to help other people. So that's what I will do.
Yes, I can see the similarities between you. And talking of living life, you're about to go off for this big family wedding, for your son's wedding, which is very exciting.
Yeah, so exciting. It's going to be actually, for me, quite emotional, because Deborah wanted to see her brother married.
Mm-hmm.
Ashley and Ben's been together 12 years, so, it's great, we know it. And a part of Deborah will be with us.
I don't doubt that for a second. Who's bringing the fancy dress?
We just had to pay for another suitcase, because you don't get much limit, do you, when you go on an aeroplane? 23 kilos. No, that's not going to be enough. But and all the shoes. But no, it will be lovely. And I think we'll all be there.
Yeah.
And celebrating with Deborah. And we'll have Deborah with us.
Yes, you will.
In heart and everything.
Oh, well, I'll be thinking of you. Have an amazing time.
I think I need it. I think it'd be a great, celebration.
Yeah, a happy thing.
18, 20 months on. It couldn't have been before. None of us was ready to celebrate before.
No.
And now we will toast Deborah. It's got to be champagne, of course. Yeah. we will celebrate that very much so. And I think that was very much when we had Sarah's 40th a few weeks ago. It did hit me totally. You sang at Deborah's 40th. And she really was quite poorly.
Mm.
And there was, 25, 30 of us there, very close friends. And she hit that milestone of 40, which meant so much.
Mm-hmm.
And she never got to another one. Sarah has hit her 40th, and she's got so much more life to live for and with and to do. And then I realise how little life Deborah had left in her after her 40th. And that really hit me, actually. One daughter, amazing, about to die. Another daughter starting. When you hit 40s, things become different. They've been married, 16 years, 17 years, and the children are growing up a little bit. And I could see they've still got so much life ahead of them and so much, I hope, fun in living, that brought back the reality of how young Deborah actually was.
Yes, and also that your role in it all, because you have to witness those things, see those things and just hold them.
Yes, yeah.
That's really tough.
That was tough, actually, and I never thought that would hit me. But it just brings back the other emotion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose that's the sort of
the mothering. I don't know.
Yeah, the sort of lonely bit of the mothering where you have you can see that, but they wouldn't understand it in the way you do because you can see it from that vantage point.
Mm. But then, of course, Sarah and Ben have lost their sister.
Yes.
And that is tough for them. And yeah. they are being amazing. Then I think, for them, that's sad. They've had to go through the loss of a sister at a very difficult age as well, actually.
Yeah. It's just always hard to lose someone before they're, you know, a young age. Like, it's just...
Yeah.
It just comes back to... It's sad never feels like enough of a word. I felt like you need more variations of sad.
Yeah,
you just end
it's
up not,
and
sad
I think that I think for me, the overriding issue in my head is that however well Hugo and Eloise are doing, and they're doing amazing, and Seb, the sadness of Hugo and Eloise losing a mother at a very vulnerable age, teenagerish, will always live with them.
Yes. Yeah.
And mold them.
Yeah, it shapes things, yeah.
It shapes things. I don't know which way it's going to shape things. In a good way, I hope. But, you know, I honestly feel for any child losing a mum at any age, and it does shape your life because it changes.
It definitely does. But there will be definitely positives that come out of it because she left a positive
yes.
imprint, and yeah. that positivity still resonates. And you
and
know,
that's the good thing that I hope will continue and carry them through.
Well, I think there's a lot of beauty in it as well. I mean, the only reason I came to see Deborah is because I started following her after stumbling across her story, and those concentric circles ripple out. And, you know, I feel like you have to feel the good of that because that's what special people do. Then they, when they bring that positivity, it does echo for age. That's that energy sustained. It doesn't go away.
Yeah, I wish I had more hours, really. I would love to just spend my time. I need to spend my time with my family and husband, but I also want to help people. I'm here. I've been through grief, but I've been through anxiety attacks. I've been through loneliness. I've been through postnatal depression. So, you know, the more you live life, the more you come across different things
yeah.
and you experience different... Some people don't experience it. Part of me think, oh, I wish I could be like you, having never experienced highs and lows. Mm. But actually, I have, and so I have to deal with that. But if I can help anybody out there, then I'm here.
Well, I think that's one of the things that, as you say, is a thing you can take from that, is that it opens you up to being empathetic to all the other people who've experienced it. And not everybody knows how to articulate things or get the support. And so, as you say, if you can be there
yeah.
and help
yeah,
help people understand they're not alone, and that I feel like everything always keeps coming back to sort of community, because we spoke about how you felt homesick when you left
yeah,
home and you wanted
terribly.
Your family around, and then you found all the other mothers
yep.
and slowly you find that and the community through, you know, online things and through the family around you when Deborah is dying. All it keeps coming back to just the positives of there being
people around,
I think.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I know there's people lonely out there and that is sad, you know, and communities are not so close now, are they, where
no.
you live? And I was, yeah, you know, I am a bit different because I would go and knock on a neighbour's door. I'm sorry, and they're sort of say, well, who are you? And well, I'm going to be your neighbour, therefore I'm here if ever you need me. People don't do that.
Not
unless
as much.
You live in my road. but, yeah, and not so much. And I would like to see more of the community help each other as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's lots out there that, yeah, but lots of positivity. And I know people are going through hard times and it is hard, but always think of one good thing, like even the rain. Deborah loved the rain. And she would sing in the rain. It's, you know, she loved the sun. but she would also sing and dance in the rain and
well,
embrace it.
Well, it's due to actually have a downpour like any minute now. So
it is. I don't like the rain. It messes up my hair, but, you know.
We could do the rain and the handstand, I'm thinking.
That would be fun, wouldn't it? Going up into a handstand in the wet, but, you know.
There you go.
But, yeah, but no, it's been lovely to talk to you, Sophie.
Yes, you too. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you.
And you know, like I said, you were amazing, and I will always remember the joy on her face of you singing Murder on the Dance Floor.
Standing on top of her, like, ottoman. Yeah, you were into Eloise's microphone.
With all the balloons, and Deborah dancing away with all her university friends.
Yeah, it was magic.
And me videoing. And, yeah.
It was really magic. I'm glad I got to be there.
And I'm so grateful. So thank you. It was a fantastic time.
A lovely thing for me too. So thank you. See what I mean about her lovely voice? And I really hope they had such a brilliant time at the wedding. It will have happened now. So I hope it was completely glorious. And what a gorgeous conversation. I feel very, very lucky that she took the time to come and see me. And I've got more brilliant things where that came from. Do you know what's just happened while I'm talking to you? My son's come in the room and now he's left the door even wider open. What's wrong with everybody? Just close the door when it's shut. Anyway, these are small fry things to complain about. And actually, I think, you know, I already used the word poignant a lot when we spoke at the beginning, but I do think it's maybe there's a nice sort of serendipity in talking to Heather, thinking about Deborah at the same week that I've had a birthday, because birthdays always make you think, don't they, about the preciousness of time and how lucky we are to see another day. And this is a gorgeous day. I mean, spring has definitely sprung in London today. It's absolutely beautiful. The sun is streaming in its golden light. And I can see one of my offspring. I can see some daffodils, some flowers, a beautiful pineapple plant that Richard got me, which is quite hilarious, got a little pineapple in the middle of it. And there's just no reason to be down, not even about doors left open during the recordings. So life is good and time is precious. And birthdays are a privilege, and I will see you next week. Lots and lots of love. See you soon.